This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Pitch to Walker, a swing and a high fly ball. Deep center field, back at the wall, it's a goner! Jordan Walker with his fifth home run.
Yep, he did it again last night, as they're yesterday, I guess I should say. The Cardinals have taken two of three from the Nationals, a struggling Washington team. They probably not going to be very good this year, but it doesn't matter. Got to get the wins when you have them on your schedule. Cardinals 7-5, off day today, and they will get back at it tomorrow here at home at Busch Stadium. They welcome the Boston Red Sox. We'll have that game 7:15. First pitch on 104.1 FM KMOX. Join the show today. Gas House Gang is always streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Find the KMOX Sports page. We're on the Odyssey app on your phone. If you put it there, you can listen. Calls and texts, 314-436-7900. Bernie Miklas, I know we talked about Jordan Walker a lot already to start the season, but I don't know that you can say enough about him right now. After 2 weeks of the year, and that's where we are. Today is 2 weeks since the season started, through these 12 games. Not only are we seeing results from him, but for somebody who has always had good bat speed, has always hit the ball hard, I mean, he's continuing to do that, and he's barreling the ball. It's not that he's just hitting the ball anymore. He's barreling it, and he's doing it better than almost anybody else in the game right now.
Yeah, and I understand there's still some skepticism out there. I've been kind of chuckling at the fact that he's pretty much being ignored by, you know, national media outlets. And yet the same outlets, you know, wrote and talked up a storm about how bad he's been and he could be at the end of the line with the Cardinals and all that. But the skeptics, I think one thing, I think it's hard for them, and I understand this, I do, it's hard for them to kind of accept that this is real and that it's something that can last rather than just being this some random hot streak. And this is where something like StatCast is really, 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 really helpful, because you can go look and you can look at the launch angle. And by the way, I don't want people to break out in a rash by the word launch angle. Launch angle is a fancy word of saying uppercut. When you swing the bat, you have a slight uppercut. You have an upward tilt. That means you hit the ball in the air and with the way he hits it hard, it's going to go far rather than beating the ball in the ground all the time. So there is a huge difference in his launch angle sweet spot metric first year, second year, third year to where it is this year. You know, when a guy makes contact with the ideal launch angle, it means that he's going to hit the pitch on the sweet spot. And Walker right now, in terms of that launch angle, he is at the sweet spot for what the ideal launch angle is. So that's why it'll last. He's finally figured out a way. He's comfortable and confident knowing how to hit a pitch into the air, how to get that upward tilt on his swing. And this is a night and day change from what he was the three previous years. That's why I think it's going to last. I'm not saying, Ron, nor are you, saying he's going to hit four home runs. He's going to hit like a home run in four out of every five games the rest of the year. But this is not a fluke thing. It is not a random thing. It is not a thing that will pass in like 3 days.
Yeah, I think
he'll have some struggles, but they all do.
It took him till August of last year to get to five home runs on the season, and now he's already there through 2 weeks. And I don't think we're talking about a 50 home run guy or anything like that, but more power. They need that from him for a team that has been, grossly lacking in power. Last year was one of their biggest issues offensively. They just didn't hit home runs. And if he can be part of that, if he could be part of that solution moving forward, that's great. Yeah, and I agree. I don't think he's not going to be a 1,000+ OPS guy in 2026. He just not. That's Hall of Fame territory. He's not that. But if he can give them 800+, that's terrific production and a great improvement from what he's been, and gives them something more that he can build on.
No, there's no doubt about it. And his career is changing as we speak. It's an amazing transformation, because I had lost a lot of hope, most hope, that he would figure it out. As time went on, and like in spring training, we all know he looked so bad, and we're like, oh man, this isn't going to happen, is it? But it has. And welcome to the new world of the Tower of Power, Jordan Walker. But he's the only hitter in the major leagues right now that's got a combination, the only guy, at least 5 home runs, at least 12 RBIs, at least 10 runs scored, 7 extra base hits, a slugging percentage of .682, an OPS over 1,000. And there was one other thing in there. .295 batting average. He is the only hitter in the major league that has that combination. So it isn't just like see ball, hit ball far. He's also drawing walks. He's hitting for average. He's an excellent base runner. His defense is a +2. He's one of the best right fielders in the game, if you believe in outs above average. So we're seeing a phenomenal all-around performance from him, not just the home run part. The only concern I have, and it's not a concern along the lines of like nitpicking or looking for fault, not at all. I'm just greedy. And so he still strikes out a little bit too much for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm greedy, and every time he strikes out, that means he does not have an opportunity to hit one 450 feet. You know, I'd rather see him have more opportunities to do that. But Matt Pauly and I were talking about it last night. If we have time, we'll talk about it later. There are reasons why his strikeout total is up. There are legitimate reasons, because he has a whole new approach to hitting. His bat's so fast, he can afford to wait for the ball to travel deep before he makes up his mind whether he's going to swing or not. And sometimes he waits too long and he pays the price, a called strike or a bad swing or whatever. So I think that part will level off after a while.
And you know, all that kind of thing you're talking about is measurable too. I mean, how deep he's letting the ball get before he makes contact, and it is deeper than he's done so far in his young career. That's happening. His feet, and all this is measurable. He's standing with his feet closer together. He's a little more closed off than he used to be, and we know that he did a lot of work during the offseason. And even during spring training, he wasn't playing in a lot of games. Remember, they took him out of some games to work on stuff on the side. And whatever it is they've been doing with him mechanically for the first 2 weeks of the season has been working. So here's the other part of the equation. What does this do for confidence? Because we have talked about the mental part of this maybe being the biggest factor in why he was struggling since he's been called up. You know, I mean, there were times he's done well, but he also struggled a lot too, and confidence has a lot to do with that. My hope, Bernie, is this first 2 weeks goes a long way in that confidence department for him.
You know, I thought he passed a test that I wanted to see him pass the test. Like, he got off to a hot start. He hit a couple of home runs on the homestand, or he hit one, and then he hit one on the road in Detroit. And then his bat went quiet for like 3 or 4 days. Okay. He was like maybe 1 for 13. He had, you know, 5 or 6 strikeouts, something like that. And he didn't hit. And he kind of looked bad, frankly. And so my whole thing was like, you know, what does this mean exactly? Does this mean that the other stuff was just a little bit of a hot streak and now he's reverted back? What does it mean? Well, since that point where we were, it's kind of like, okay, let's see what he's going to do with this. Well, he's just gone absolutely bonkers since then, with 4 home runs in his last 5 games, driving in 9 or 10, and just hitting the kind of home run shots where players in the other dugout just like look and say, "This, no, there's no way this a guy that big has got a bat that quick and can hit it that far and that hard every time he makes contact." This guy's not for real. I mean, players on the other team are in awe of what they're seeing in him, because that combination of strength, hard hit rate, exit velocity, just how far the ball travels when he makes contact, and the fact that he's used to hit it on the ground nearly 50% of the time. Now that's down to like 35, 36%.
Yep.
See, they loved him hitting the ball on the ground because you can get fielders to knock down those hard hit ground balls. They don't do a dang thing for your team, but they're like, oh my gosh, this, what are we going to work with? He's not chasing pitches the way he did. He's not hitting ground balls the way he did. He's not swinging at junk. He's confident. He's figured out how to get the ball in the air. That's not fair. This guy's a monster now, you know? It's really been interesting to kind of pick up on the vibe of what the other team's seeing.
And he's been doing a lot of this lately anyway, hitting in the fourth spot of the order. And right. I don't know. I have to figure that's his spot to lose at this point, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because they don't have one.
Yeah.
They don't have a four hitter. I think he's earned it, and I think he'll keep it. Unless suddenly it all starts to fall apart. But again, we've talked to reasons why that's unlikely to happen. And you and I are not saying that he's going to stay this hot because nobody does.
No.
But has he proved earlier, the thing I just talked about, when he got into a valley and you look whether his confidence might have been draining a little bit, no, lasted a brief while and then he's hitting the ball out of the ballpark again.
And, you know, that'll be the thing for me because he is going to struggle. It's inevitable and it's nothing about him. It's every player is going to do it. I'm going to need to see what happens on the other end of it. It's going to happen. It could happen starting tonight. It could be at the end of the month. It could be next month and it could go on for a few weeks. It's what does he do? What if he has a bad month? What does Jordan Walker do on the other side of that? How does he respond to that bad month? That's the thing that I think will tell us, okay, he's figured it out or he's starting to really figure it out and we could be confident that growth is going to continue. Or if he doesn't figure it out, if he goes into a slump and then he just can't find a way to pull himself out of it, then we'll have one way or the other, we're going to know a lot. We're going to have a lot of information about him.
When he would get in these ruts, these horrible, horrible ruts, that would, in fact, last a long time. He couldn't find a way out because he had. This is the Jordan Walker that, frankly, would not buy into what the Cardinals were telling him he had to do to change things and to maximize his great talent. He was not accepting of coaching. He did not embrace coaching. He liked his swing, and they kept telling him, "But dude, you know." You know, half the balls you put in play are ground balls. It's like too much. If you can just get that in the air, you're going to be a dynamic hitter who everyone in the game is terrified of. And but you really have to make the effort to try to get some upswing when you swing. But he for whatever reason, man, he had a psychological block about doing that, and he didn't embrace it. So. My answer to you is like he couldn't find his way out because he didn't know how, and part of it was because he was too stubborn to try to find out how. But now, pardon the cliche, he has seen the light. Like he's on top of the world, and he knows exactly what changed. One thing changed. Well, two, better plate judgment. But really, one thing changed that had to change. The Cardinals have been trying to change it for multiple years. Hit the ball in the air. He knows exactly how to do it now. And he's really comfortable doing it. So now he knows what to fall back on if he gets in one of those ruts, because that's something new to his game. And you can tell he's really, really excited about it.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, the Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser. And Zachary watching us on YouTube, you can do the same. Find the KMOX sports page and watch the show. Zachary says, well, Chris, the slump can't start tonight. He's referring to Walker. Yeah, that's correct, because they don't play tonight. The Cardinals will play tomorrow. They've got the Boston Red Sox in town. We, in fact, are going to talk to Rob Bradford from WEEI. The team that he covers is the Red Sox, and so he will be joining us at 12:30. Wilson Contreras has been involved in he had a little dust up with the Milwaukee Brewers. He does not like the fact they continue to hit him with pitches. And so we'll see how Wilson Contreras is fitting in Boston. And we'll talk about that Red Sox team with him. And there's more Cardinals stuff to discuss. We'll do that when we come back.
Bernie Nicklaus on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bago Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Bernie and Ranji today here on the Gas House Gang until 1 o'clock every weekday from 12 until 1. You can check in with us by leaving a comment on Facebook or YouTube or Twitter. That's how we are streaming. Also on the Odyssey app. If you want to stream us on the Odyssey app, you can absolutely do that with us. We're going to talk to Rob Bradford about the Boston Red Sox. That's the next team in town for the Cardinals starting tomorrow at Busch Stadium. Rob is with WEEI in Boston. Now, J.J. Weatherholt has been at the top of the order since the start of the season. For the most part, I think there was a time or two that he was out and Wynn was leading off. But with a 360-plus OPS, or excuse me, OBP, at the start of the year, I mean, at the top of the order, I think that is, I mean, Bernie, for a young start for him, a guy who's only in the first couple of weeks of his career, that's about right. I mean, if he can do that and continue to improve on it and continue to improve the, you know, the batting average and maybe slug a little bit better, that's a perfectly good top of the order guy you've got there.
I think he's doing swell. I think the power will come, and you know, basically that was my belief even before he got to the majors, that it would take him a while to hit for power, but he's got the swing to do it. It's just getting acclimated and knowing what pitches to drive and what pitches to hit the other way and things like that. The education continues, but he's got great instincts at the plate, and he's a really, really tough at bat. He can dig his way out of two strike counts. He can fall behind in the count and then come out ahead. He likes to take walks. He takes a lot of walks. He's also not a predictable hitter. He's not pull crazy. He's not trying to hit everything to right field. He'll take it up the middle. He'll take it opposite field. And there are certain guys where when they have a bat in their hands, it's like they just know what to do. Depending on the situation, he's an excellent situational hitter too. The thing that has surprised me, listen, I didn't think that he was going to be bad defensively. I really didn't. He has been outstanding defensively at second base. In fact, if you believe in the StatCast stuff, he's one of the two or three highest rated second basemen in the majors right now defensively. And if you watch him, like that DC series, he was making all kinds of plays. He's really good at second base.
It's not all been rosy for the Cardinals, even though they are 7-5, and there is one spot of concern, and I don't know even know how concerned I actually am, but I have not liked what I have seen from Dustin May at the start of this year. So first couple of starts, his ERA is almost 16. So it's been a huge struggle. I don't envision that this is who he is. I don't think we're looking at a 15-16 ERA guy. I think we're looking at somebody who is a lot better than that. But what do you suppose has gone wrong with him at the beginning of the year? Why has it been so difficult to get outs?
Well, if you look at the guy's throwing incredibly hard, so there's nothing physical there. So that's reassuring. But his stuff is really, really hittable. I mean, really hittable. And my theory, which is hardly a radical theory, I believe he's tipping pitches. They look like they know what's coming. And that's happened to a lot of pitchers. I mean, it's a constant cat and mouse game with that. So I'm sure that they're diagnosing it. I'm sure they're working on it. If he's giving away stuff, they'll close that up. Because he just has too much talent. And the fact that he's completely healthy, there's no way that he's this bad of a pitcher. There just isn't. But they got to identify the big question: is he tipping off pitches? Because that could be one reason to explain it. I think he'll turn it around because again, he's healthy, he's happy, not happy with the ERA. He's got the stuff that he needs to become a good starting pitcher.
Dustin May starts tomorrow against the Red Sox at Busch Stadium. Connelly Early is his opponent tomorrow. When we come back, we are going to talk to Rob Bradford from WEEI in Boston about the Red Sox and their disappointing start to the season and what the Cardinals are in for this weekend at Busch Stadium. It is the Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on KMOX.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bago Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Did he get him again? Yeah, he did. He hit him again.
Sixth.
For the sixth time, his brother comes out and walks him up the first base line. And again, there is history between the Red Sox Contreras and the Milwaukee Brewers that goes beyond all the hit batsmen.
Wilson Contreras gets hit a lot by the Brewers for some reason. And that highlight courtesy of Nesson. It is the Gas House Gang with Bernie and Ranji today. Time to go to the guest line. We bring in Rob Bradford, who we usually just talk to when the Cardinals and Red Sox make a trade, which seems like half a dozen times it's been already this year, with WEEI and also his Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. Rob is with us. How's it going, Rob?
Well, the day's still young. You know, who knows? Maybe they're going to make a deal in this off day. So first of all, it's awesome being with you guys as always. And the Contreras thing spices things up a little bit. I mean, we already have one bench clearing brawl over in Anaheim, and I thought we might have one at Fenway, but it sort of surfaced, bubbled up a lot of things about Wilson Contreras and how intense he is. And you guys know that.
Yeah, he really is. It's one of the things we liked about him a lot in his 3 years. But he got off to a slow start with the Red Sox. Sonny Gray's first start wasn't all that hot, but he's been really good the last two. But, you know, how are those two guys viewed by Sox media and fans?
Well, first of all, everyone was viewed poorly in the first week and a half. But I do think that both those guys have surfaced as more part of the solution than the problem. There's no doubt about it. As you said, Sonny's sort of righted the ship a little bit the last couple starts. And then Wilson, you know, it's interesting because it's always a good car. I love the conversation of clubhouse dynamics, of leadership, and you know, how, you know, baseball isn't really something where you put a stool in the middle of the room and everyone gives a speech and say, there's a leader. A lot of guys do it in a lot of different ways. And I think that they need what Wilson Contreras delivers. And we saw it even before the Milwaukee thing where, you know, you had an ABS challenge where he was so upset that he got thrown near at the pitch before. And he has the ABS challenge. And basically it was the walk-off job on the ABS challenge where he doesn't wait for the call. He just goes down and he throws his stuff through the dugout. And the next thing you know, he's sliding like way, way, way late into second. But all of that, that's what this team needs. It's not about the jersey exchanges, which is, we know that in baseball, that's become more and more. You need that guy, which is just, hey, I'm here to win. I don't care what you think about me. Because the Red Sox right now, without Bregman, we don't know who that guy is. And certainly Contreras can't be that guy.
So what do you suppose is behind this 4-8 start by the Red Sox? Again, it's still very early, and this could change in the course of a week, but it just hasn't looked right yet.
Yeah, well, that's right there. I mean, it hasn't looked right. And I spent 45 days in spring training coming out of it saying, oh, I think they're going to be pretty good. And this guy's going to be good. That guy's going to be good. And then nobody was good. So I think it's sort of just not getting the most out of the guys that you were banking on. It's that simple. And you know, when it comes to that start, it was up and down the roster. It was the starting pitching, which was supposed to be the be-all, end-all with this team. Once they pivoted away from Bregman, they said, all right, we're going to do run prevention. Well, okay, you sign Ranger Suarez. He hasn't been good. And then you have other starters who haven't been good. When your starting pitcher ERA, as of a couple days ago, was worse than the Colorado Rockies, with all due respect to the Rockies and their fan base, like, that should be put everything in perspective a little bit. And then on top of it, you didn't have the hitters. Like, you just didn't have the guys who you were banking on hitting actually hitting. And it's gotten a little bit better. That's why they've won these last couple games. But still, they just, like, the blueprint that they have, they have to find a way to actually come close to having that blueprint come to fruition, because right now they've already had to bob and weave their way through these first few games and figure out what works.
Rob Bradford with us from WEEI in Boston. He does a phenomenal job, not just talking part, but the writing part. Anyway, Rob, I want to ask you this. I guess we got to get an update, if you will, on Chaim Bloom. They love him here. He's done a hell of a job here. He really has. I mean, this is supposed to be a rebuilding year, and actually the club's really good. So it's an interesting dynamic. But is the whole Bloom time in Boston now, is that just like so far in the past that people don't even bother to waste their energy arguing about, you know, whether he deserved to get fired or he didn't deserve to get fired? Is that now filed into history and it's like, eh, whatever, you know?
Yeah, well, I think they've pivoted. Unfortunately for Craig Breslow, they've sort of pivoted. And I don't know if you heard it, but in this homestand, you heard had the sell the team chant. And people say, oh, is that the loudest you had to sell the team chant? I said, I've never heard the sell the team chant. They weren't saying that when Chaim was here. I mean, Chaim was more in the crosshairs, certainly, than ownership was, even though they were taking the tact of, we want the Tampa Bay Rays way of doing things, which he kind of delivered. And so, you know, I think that how they've gone about it now, it's Chaim Bloom, to your point, is so far in the past. I think when people mention Chaim, they, number one, mention what a great guy, and the people around him, like, he's really just a super, super human being. Now, also, that he did a lot of great things, and a lot of those things are manifesting themselves on the Major League team right now with the Red Sox, because he went through the drafts of the Roman Anthonys and these sort of guys. So he did a lot of good things, and we've said this before. I think the one thing that people might have been frustrated was he wasn't able to actually pull the trigger on a lot of key things, which a lot of people thought that they needed. And, you know, you go back to the trade deadline a few years ago where he said they were underdogs and they were a game out of the wild card, and they were playing the team right in front of them for four games. And that didn't go over well with anybody. But I think that the aggression maybe of Chaim, that was the thing that frustrated them. But at the same time, when he went to St. Louis and he's done this, I don't think anyone's surprised. I think this is a perfect spot for him. And he is a good baseball guy. He does know what he's doing. It's just in Boston, it's really when you have dollar ticket night for Yankees and you have the Dodgers fans marching down Lansdowne, people don't like that no matter how much you're building up the farm system.
Hold on. There's an actual dollar ticket night for a Yankees?
No. They didn't want it to be a dollar ticket night, but
secondary market?
Yeah, secondary market. This is honestly when Chaim was like, oh, it was sort of this confluence of, you know, you had the apathy creeping in. You had the Dodgers, that fan base, taking over Fenway Park. And then you had a Yankee series where people notice you can get a ticket for a dollar, and people like that is not the way that the Red Sox saw things coming. So all of that, you know, the A word is very, very important around here, and that's apathy. And if there's any semblance of that creeping in, then it becomes a very, very real thing, and I think that didn't help Chaim at all.
I want to follow up a little bit, and it's not so much about Chaim Bloom, but it's just like the inner workings of ownership management. When you look at some of the controversial things like trading Mookie Betts, I don't think that was a Chaim Bloom thing. I think that was an ownership thing. But on the ground now, I mean, the fan base is really, really unhappy. You know, they let Bregman get away. They didn't pursue Bichette. Maybe there were a couple other moves they could have made. They didn't. Is that an ownership thing or is that a Craig Breslow thing?
Well, right now, people think it's an ownership thing, even though their payroll is way up there. I think in large part, to be perfectly honest, because there's a couple powerful media entities getting behind the ownership thing. Getting behind, you know, like, to sell the team, and, you know, that narrative has really, really taken root. And as Greg Garrett Crochet told me, and he went through it for 3 or 4 years in Chicago with the White Sox, he said, it's not necessarily saying sell the team, it's just saying to the players, you aren't as good as we want you to be. I mean, that's their way of doing it. But when it comes to how this is constructed, as I said, the payroll's there. They've made some aggressive moves and everything else. I think the biggest problem is, and I don't put this on ownership. I put it on ownership in them signing off on this is the way we're going to do things. If you get into the free agent market and you know that to get Alex Bregman, you're going to have to get uncomfortable. Well, you got to get uncomfortable to a level that you don't anticipate. That's just the way free agency works. That's not the way this front office has worked. They've set their price. They've gone by their models. And then they've jumped ship when it's got too uncomfortable. And that you just can't do that. And that's not how it had been in Boston. In Boston, it was always, we want the guy. We're going to get the guy. That's come and gone. And I think that frustrated a lot of people.
Rob, what do you think about the American League East so far? And again, 2 weeks through the season, Yankees on top, then Baltimore, Tampa. We just saw Tampa for the opener of the season, then the Blue Jays, and now the Red Sox at the bottom. Is it, how much movement do you think will actually happen here by the end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of these teams, the four teams after the Yankees, Somebody will figure it out, and they'll take off. I mean, it could be the Red Sox. It certainly could be the Orioles, although their pitching now seems pretty thinned out. And you never discount the Rays. And obviously, like, I thought the Blue Jays were just going to take the feel-good vibes of the World Series and keep going, and obviously that hasn't really happened to the level that they wanted. Well, it's the same old thing. Like, I was wrong about so much coming out of spring training because I looked at this division. I said, you cannot get off to a bad start, because I thought it was the best division in baseball, and it just simply hasn't been, other than the Yankees. And I think what the Yankees should get credit for is that everyone was giving them a hard time of not doing a lot of moves where they knew they were good, and they knew that they had Cam Schlittler, and they knew they had a good starting rotation. And, yeah, you lose Luke Weaver and Devin Williams, but you know you have other guys coming. They were really, really convinced that they were going to be good enough, and sure enough, it seems like they are. So I do think the division will get better, but American League across the board, when you have, three teams, all but three teams under 500 or 500, like, that's not what anyone anticipated.
Rob, I want to ask you about Dustin May. And first of all, that turned out to be a hell of a trade for the Red Sox when they got him from the Dodgers, and he was damaged goods, basically. But this outfield prospect, James Tibbs III, who came along, he's just destroying everything in AAA. So that kudos to Breslow for making a great trade there. All right, we're confused by Dustin May because he's totally healthy. He looks strong. He feels great. He's throwing 97. But other than throwing 97 and looking great and being strong again, like, nothing's working. Have you heard anything through the grapevine, some theories on why he has been so hittable his first two starts as a member of the Cardinals rotation?
Yeah, no, I think I came on and I said, oh, well, that's not a bad flyer to go to with Dustin May. And I thought that at the time, you coming off an injury, maybe you figured things out, and obviously it didn't work out with the Red Sox. But sometimes you see that. You get a little bit away from any sort of physical problems and you find your old form. And we know that why Dustin May, why the Red Sox traded for him and why the Cardinals traded for him is because, you know, what he represented with the Dodgers for a good stretch. But to answer your question, you know, I can't tell you, like, that people in baseball, people even with the Red Sox, are like, oh, my goodness, he's not going to be closer to the version with the Dodgers. I still think you can hang out some hope there, and maybe it is still a little bit of, like, you're figuring yourself out after last year's downturn. But the whole pitching market, man, like, you look at it, you pay this money for Dustin May. You pay, I think, 1 year, $18 million for Chris Bassett. And yet, this is a little self-promotion, but, like, in about 50 minutes, I'm going to talk to a guy who is unsigned, who, like, I can't, you know, Lucas Giolito, who, because the analytics and the under-the-hood stuff maybe isn't what a Dustin May is, that he is unsigned. Like, that's what really bugs me about baseball. I'm not saying Dustin May won't figure it out, but that's why he landed with that contract, because of what I said, because of the projections of it all.
Hey, Rob, real quick. I have no problem admitting I'm a knucklehead, but I'm not dumb, if that makes sense. For some reason, I screwed up that trade when I was talking about. I don't know why. Maybe too much caffeine. But actually, the Red Sox gave up James Tibbs to the Dodgers.
You were right. Your instincts were keen because no matter what, James Tibbs should be surfaced. James Tibbs is the best hitter in minor league baseball, any trade involving James Tibbs should be mentioned. So, yeah.
I didn't want to lose it. Not that you have any reason to respect me, but I didn't want to lose your respect because I admire you so much.
No, dude, you guys are at the top of my list. I really, really like this. Is one thing every time I come on. I appreciate you having me on so much. I appreciate the Cardinals and Red Sox making so many trades, and I appreciate my business partner Joe Kelly obviously has a history there with St. Louis. So you guys are the best. Believe me.
Joe Kelly's great, man. He's an interesting fellow. Let us know if Giolito is going to end up signing with the Cubs. We're curious about that. Because obviously we have a vested interest in what happens in the division, and the Cubs are supposed to win this division, but they've got some injuries and they don't look good, and maybe there's an opening. So,
well, this is a weird one. It's a little bit behind the curtain. You know, I've had Giolito on a bunch, and we haven't really talked about what's going on with him, but you know, so he's like, yeah, come down and do a podcast. So come down here and dare Cressy Performance and do a podcast. But now I'm thinking, I'm like, do I have to post this podcast like right away? Because by tonight, it's like he's going to sign. Because I had people in Chicago call me today. Uh-oh. I mean, and then you have Baltimore, you know, Baltimore with Eflin going down. So maybe Giolito's playing this right. I don't know. You have to stay tuned. You have to listen to baseball.
We will. That's right. Rob That's Bradford, right. You're awesome, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it.
Now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Just about a minute left here before we say goodbye. And Bernie, the Billikens put out a post on social media just within the hour here about their 9 returners for next year. They are bringing back everybody they expected to, with the exception of Anya and Dunlap. They're both gone. Obviously, Avila has graduated out, so he's no longer available to play, but they're bringing back pretty much everybody, and that's great. So Josh Schertz has that to build on.
Yeah, man, got the nucleus back, minus a key guy. Like you said, we knew that Avila was going to go, but I'll be really curious to see what he can do in the transfer portal. I got a feeling he's going to do well.
Bernie Miklas, we will hear you on Redbird Rush Hour tomorrow at 5, and then I will talk to you next week, Tuesday, Ollie Day. Ollie Marmol back Tuesday on the Gas House Gang. Thanks, bud.
Always great being with you, Ronge. Thank you, buddy.
You too. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronge on the Gas House Gang. This show is back tomorrow at noon. Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly are in with me. Coming up next, though, it is the Dave Glover Show. This has been the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.